Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and later on the show, we'll be going behind the scenes with film producer, writer, and film professor Dale Pollack. He'll explore that gnarly nexus between violence and humor in film. But first, it's time for Dick Wagner and the Chromatics. That'd be Richard Wagner, the great 19th century German opera composer who took this centuries-old tradition, turned it on its head, and called it Gesamtkunstwerk, total artwork. Dick Wagner and the Chromatics was actually the name I wanted to give my woodwind quintet back in college, but alas, Richard wasn't all that big on chamber music, and even less so for chamber music for winds. What Wagner did compose, hundreds and hundreds of pages worth, was opera. His first complete opera, The Fairies, came at the age of 20. This effort went unproduced until shortly after his death in 1883, but Wagner was unfazed by early operatic stumbles. Somewhere in between, he composed about a dozen others, many of which are considered masterpieces. Wagner's most famous Ring Cycle is a set of four enormous operas based loosely on elements of Germanic mythology. Wagner knew a good story when he heard one, and the legend of the Flying Dutchman struck his fancy long before the Ring. You see, there is this arrogant Dutchman who thought that he could sail around the Cape, making a bet with the devil in the process. Well, he lost that bet, and to lift the devil's curse, he's forced to sail the high seas for centuries in search of the one woman who will love him truly and forever. The Dutchman is given one chance every 7 years to come on land and try to find his one true love, and Friday, October 25th, is his lucky day. That's when the Piedmont Opera's production of Richard Wagner's Flying Dutchman comes to the Stevens Center of the UNC School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. Performances continue Sunday the 27th and Tuesday the 29th, when the Flying Dutchman finds the lovely Zenta, sung by acclaimed soprano and UNC School of the Arts alumna Carter Scott. When we first meet Zenta, we find her not pining away for her boyfriend Eric, but staring lovingly at a portrait that hangs on the wall of her father's factory. It's a mysterious man about whom exists a legend, and of the legend there is a folk song, which she sings, The Legend of the Flying Dutchman. Piedmont Opera's Jamie Albritton gets us up to speed.
As she begins to sing the song, she sort of loses her focus and says in the middle of the song, "My goodness, if he could only love one woman, let it be me, let it be me." And lo and behold, who shows up at the house but the man himself, the Flying Dutchman. And she falls desperately in love with him. She's going to leave with him, but as she approaches the dock, her boyfriend, Eric, comes and says, "What are you, out of your mind? I love you. Don't go with this awful man." And the Dutchman overhears it, and he says, "That's it. I have to find the one woman who is true to me, and it's clear that you are not she. I must wander the seas again." And he takes off. And at that moment, Zenta, horrified, leaps off the dock and jumps into the ocean, and the two of them are united forever.
And that's just the story. And
that's
then we get into the music,
story.
And which from the very beginning, from the overture, is something just spectacular and new with... Did these wind machines...
Oh, there's a wind machine in the orchestra.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Just describe that much of it, just as a little entree, because I think it's cool.
A wind machine?
Yeah. How do they make that sound?
You should ask John Beck, our percussion teacher over at UNCSA, because he built one.
I was going to say, maybe I did it. Yeah.
He did. The one that he built, anyway, there's a piece of canvas over top of this. It's a wheel. And the wheel has, across the outside of it, there are wooden slats. And then over top of the wheel, there's a piece of canvas. And you turn the wheel, and the slats rub up alternately against the canvas. And so you hear this sort of... And that's the wind machine.
But that just sets the scene, the overture to the Flying Dutchman. Then we get into the singing. And Zenta, tell me about singing this particular role, technical challenges, and just approaching it from the singer's standpoint.
Sure. The most famous is, I think, the Dutchman duet, which every soprano dreams of singing. Mm. It's beautiful. It's a gift to sing it. Mm. In fact, I was working with a friend of mine up in New York, and the first time I sang it with him, with a baritone in my ear, I almost could not make it through it. I was just so overcome with emotion. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
there are some people who are afraid to sing these things, but I'm not, because my voice sits in these areas.
Why would they be afraid?
Well, the orchestra is big. The tessitura, just like Turandot, is very high. I'm doing air quotes now. It's Wagner. Things like that. But, I mean, that's kind of where I am now in my maturity.
You can't, for non-singers, you can't just, well, I'm not familiar with singers who just jump out of the conservatory and become Wagnerian, this, that, and the other thing. So talk about that development, what you need to have physically to be able to take on these roles, and why you need to have that.
Well, a very famous, wonderful Wagnerian, Birgit Nilsson, was asked the same question. She said, what does a singer need to sing Wagner roles? And she said, very comfortable shoes. They're long. They are long.
It's a lot of singing. And the range?
Well, it's just very different. It's very different from Puccini. It's very different from Verdi. These are the things I sing. It's very different from Mozart. I think you have to have a lot of breath support because there's a beautiful cadenza in this thing. I mean, there are some coloratura passages, but it's not Rossini coloratura. In fact, I sang Third Norn in Washington with the National Opera, and I walked into the first rehearsal and I thought, oh my God, I'm with my people. They're big people. Wagnerians are big people.
Big folk.
Yeah, and the stage is big. How long it takes them to say, I love you, is long. You know, it's just, it's grand.
We hear this name, Wagner, all the time. Mozart, Wagner Opera. He had his hands in every aspect of the production virtually.
Absolutely.
Talk about that just in itself. This guy changed the whole concept of the art.
Perhaps the most significant thing is that he was both librettist and composer. You know, what's interesting is that when he was a young man, he started out wanting to be a playwright. And he went to see a production of Egmont with Beethoven's incidental music. And he came away sort of dumbfounded and said, I understand now. I have to write everything. Because it was the music that made the play mean so much to him. So he went home and basically said, Mom, help me. I got to learn how to write music. And began to write music after that. He went on to have a vision about stage directions that he writes in his librettos. They're so incomprehensible for that time period.
And within that, you mentioned leitmotif, Carter. First off, describe leitmotif and how, you know, what it's used to represent in the case of this Dutchman opera, and the challenges, I guess, of really using that effectively.
This is early Wagner. This is his first mature work. He's really sort of figuring out the leitmotif construction. I think that he learned a tremendous amount from Beethoven. And Beethoven, you know, he doesn't write so much themes as he writes motives.
Little motives, yeah.
And I think that he took from Beethoven that motivic idea. And in Dutchman, there are motives that connect to individuals. And that's how he, just as Beethoven constructs his symphony from these little motivic ideas, Wagner constructs his operas in using these motivic ideas. But he hasn't fully worked out the leitmotif idea. Yes, we have, as you know from the overture, the very first tune you hear is the tune that's connected with the Dutchman. But there are also motives that just exist sort of in a symphonic form as motives that begin to build the fabric of this opera. From the greatest musician to the most humble amateur, people who love Wagner's operas love to study it because it's like a never-ending puzzle. And just when you think you've understood something, there's another puzzle piece over there that you didn't see. So I think it's great to study it, but like so much of opera, you don't have to understand anything. What you have to prepare yourself for is such a very, very rich evening of music making. And whether you understand anything about motivic construction or not, that's not the point, because what it creates is this subliminally active world that you are literally immersed in, and you come away with such a very rich theatrical experience, I think.
Can I interject something?
I wish you would, Carter.
Golly. I'm so old. I graduated in 86 from School of the Arts. I actually call it School of the Arts, but you guys are calling it something else. UNCSA. Okay.
We have a U now.
My music history professor, Dr. Gray, He would do the drop the needle tests and would lecture and all these kinds of things. And here we were, you know, college kids. All we wanted to do was sing and have people clap for us. Anyway, he said to us when we were in the romantic period of which Wagner is a part of, he exposed us to these things, as did my opera lit professor, also Norman Johnson, may he rest in peace. He said, however, we're listening to these on a vinyl, Wagnerian operas, but both Dr. Gray and Norman said you have to experience Wagner in the theater. And as a kid, I was like, ugh, you know, these old guys, I don't know what they're talking about. You know, it's just music, gah. And when I finally got to Germany and I was able to experience Wagner in the theater, I have a very good friend, John Fiore, who does a lot of the Ring cycles, and he's very, very much into performing Wagner's music. He invited me down to Dusseldorf to see Parsifal on Good Friday, if you know anything about Parsifal, that's when you want to see Parsifal.
Is it the longest Wagnerian opera as well?
It's like 6 hours, I'm telling you. And I like to sing opera. I don't like to go to opera.
Let's just get that up front.
Exactly. And so I thought, oh, Lord have mercy, I'm going to sit in this theater for 6 hours. But let me tell you, I did not want it to end.
Yeah.
That's how amazing it was. And this is from a cynical, like, busman's holiday type thing. I did not want to leave the theater. And again, if you know Parsifal, there's like an echo chorus that comes from elsewhere. And they were like behind me. And it was just unbelievable. And I didn't know anything about that opera, you know. And this was my first exposure to Wagner, my first exposure to Parsifal, my first exposure to a 6-hour opera. I feel strongly about this. If you're able to see Wagner in the States, do it, because it's something that needs to be experienced in the theater. I can't say that enough. It really, that the sounds engulf you.
Acclaimed soprano and UNC School of the Arts alumna Carter Scott. She was joined by conductor Jamie Albritton. You can celebrate the 200th anniversary of Wagner's birth with the Piedmont Opera production of The Flying Dutchman on Friday, October 25th at the Stevens Center of the UNC School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. Performances continue Sunday the 27th and Tuesday the 29th, and you'll find links to ticket information and more at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. When we come back from this short break, we'll take a peek behind the scenes with film scholar Dale Pollack. And Bethany Chafin has a New River Breakdown with author Terry Kennedy, Unicorn Press, and a team of local artists next when Triad Arts Weekend continues.